Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find
one. Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stock.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody. Welcome aboard. This is Peter Schiff. I am president of Euro Pacific Capital. I am the host of this show every hour live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. I broadcast on my website at www.europac.net and on the shortwave radio 5.07 megahertz. The show can be heard live every Wednesday, and the shows are immediately archived on my website where they can be listened to at your leisure. They also are available in MP3 format, so that they could be downloaded for playback on any devices that accept that. And again, the website, the web address is www.europac.net, europac.net. And again, I want to remind all the listeners that this is a call-in program. I invite and welcome participation from the listeners, both clients of Euro Pacific Capitals and prospective clients. The number to call is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Topics I want to talk about during the hour, number one, of course, is the markets themselves and the worldwide sell-off in everything. Everything that went up for the past year, for the past 6 months, has come down. And the more it went up, the more it came down. And that's kind of been across the board. Euro Pacific Capital clients are seeing the values of their accounts, at least in dollars, drop along with everybody else's for a change. It's not something that's happened quite often at Euro Pacific, but certainly there is always volatility in our positions. And from time to time, the value of the shares that we buy drop. And more likely than not, such market action represents great buying opportunities. And not only for existing clients to add to their positions, but for new clients to begin positions at better entry points. So we always welcome market declines. Long-term investors who are looking to buy are always looking for bargains, always looking for opportunities and trying to take advantage of the misfortune or the bad luck of others. And I think that's really what we're happening right now with a lot of liquidity, I mean, a lot of leverage in the system. There are a lot of forced sellers. And, of course, whenever you have a lot of people who have to sell, the market's not going to reward them with a good price. You know, whenever there are a lot of sellers, the prices move down. The sellers are more motivated. They have to go. No one has to buy. The price moves down in order to flush out the sellers and attract buyers. You know, nothing will motivate a value buyer like prices. It's just like if a store wants to move out a lot of merchandise, what do? They have a sale. They put things on sale, lower prices, bring in more customers. They move the merchandise further. You know, if they mark the price up, they're not going to attract extra buyers with higher prices. So this is a sale. A lot of the stocks that I have been recommending, we have been recommending at Euro Pacific Capital, have been marked down. Of course, the ones that have been marked down the most are those related specifically to mining and precious metals, and then also not nearly as much, but also the other, energy, oil and gas type investments. They've come down as well. Not nearly as much as have the metals-oriented investments. So great opportunities. We'll talk about that with your questions as well as my comments. Also, we got to talk about inflation. CPI came out today. PPI came out yesterday. We got to talk about that. I want to talk about my recent media appearances. I've been on television a lot in the last few days. I wonder if anybody have some comments. very interesting programming. I did an interview on Bloomberg Television on Friday, and then I did two CNBC appearances. I did a CNBC appearance on Squawk Box yesterday morning, and I did another one this morning. So if anybody happened to catch those appearances, give me a call. They were interesting. Certainly this morning's was the most lively of the discussions. But anyway, good topics to talk about. Also want to talk about, I think a fourth thing I want to talk about is a speech that Bernanke made just today, I believe, in which he basically praised American households for what a good job they were doing in managing their finances. Now, this is absolutely ridiculous because, of course, the average American is up to his eyeballs in debt. I mean, he's not managing his finances. He's one paycheck away from disaster. They've been able to juggle their finances. They've been able to make it work, but they haven't done a good job. When you put yourself in a position where you're one paycheck away from bankruptcy, that doesn't mean you manage yourself very well. You know, you got yourself into a very sticky situation, and so far you've managed to dodge all the bullets, but, you know, there's a machine gun coming, and, you know, there's no way Americans are going to dodge, you know, all those bullets. Anyway, again, the number to call, the lines are open. The number is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. We get started by talking about the inflation numbers. And, you know, I was watching the CBS Evening News, you know, about an hour ago, and the lead story on the news was inflation. And they talked about the fact that the core CPI was now up 3.8% over the last 12 months, and that was the biggest increase in the core CPI, I think, since 1988. And the whole story was about inflation and the fact that it's picking up and things are going to get more expensive. Now, would you believe that during the entire presentation, there wasn't one single mention of the actual inflation rate? Not once. The headline number, right, not the core, but the actual inflation rate, right, was up by 5.5% over the last 12 months. But not one mention of the actual inflation rate during the entire CBS News report. I mean, what a fantastic job the government propaganda machine is doing with the media. They don't even mention the actual inflation rate. You know, so as bad as a 3.8% rate is on the core, isn't a 5.5% rate even worse? You know, what point is it? What's the point of telling Americans that over the last year, inflation went up by 3.8% as long as you don't count the increases in the food costs or the increase in the energy costs, as if none of the people watching CBS buy food and buy energy. In fact, if anything, the food and energy represent the two most important items in the CPI. Those are the two things that consumers buy every day. And so how can CBS purport, you know, to do a story on inflation, on the rising cost of living, and not even mention how much prices rose if you included food and energy? Now, if you look at this 5.5% increase in price, and again, the CBI numbers are distorted. I mean, the way they calculate it, it's understating inflation. Of course, the government constantly claims that it overstates inflation, and the more they claim it overstates it, the more you know it actually understates it. But assuming we took it at face value, if inflation is running year on year at 5.5%, what does that mean about interest rates? Fed funds are at 5%. 30-year bonds are 5.1%. That means interest rates are still negative. That means the Fed is still extremely accommodative. Despite all these quarter-point interest rates, we have an extremely accommodative Fed that continues to fall further and further and further behind the inflation curve. And so we know there's a lot more interest rate hikes to come. Whether the Fed wants to do it or not, that is what is going to happen. Do we have any callers on the line? Oh, here. I thought I was having some technical difficulty. I had lost my internet connection. Now I'm back on. But yeah, it's just amazing. I didn't see the news, the broadcasts on any of the other websites. I mean, any other network news. But I'm sure it was the same. But you know, to not even mention the actual number. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. Now, they did say that they were talking about inflation, not ex food and energy. I've actually seen some reports where they talk about the core rate, but they don't even tell you that it's a core rate. They just say inflation was up, you know, 3%, and the 3% was the core. You know, the headline might have been 4.5, but they don't even tell you that they're giving you the core. This is how ridiculous, how absolutely ridiculous the media is with respect to how they buy Wall Street's and the government's arguments, hook, line, and sinker, that food and energy prices just have absolutely no reason to be included in the CPI. Now, also, the core CPI today came out, you know, it was up 0.3%. And I know it's interesting, too, and I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but whenever the government releases economic statistics that are supposed to be high, like productivity, like GNP, the numbers are always released in an annualized fashion. So that during the quarter, the GNP was up 1%. When they announce it, they say the GNP was up 4%. They take the 1% and they annualize it to make it sound bigger, right? They want to say the economy grew by 4%. They don't want to say the economy grew by 1%, so they say 4%. Now, when they report inflation on a monthly basis, they don't take the 0.54% rate, multiply it by 12, and say inflation is up 5%. No, they say inflation is up 0.4%. So it just helps to create the impression that it's not a problem. And it shows a double standard, the way the government reports economic data and economic statistics, and the way that, you know, the way they try to influence the way these statistics are perceived. But within the core CPI, once again, rents up 0.6% for the month. Annualized rate up over 7% on the year of the cost of rents. And I knew this was coming. I wrote about this over a year ago, the core CPI, which was 40% rents, one of the biggest artificial drags was rents, and that rents were being affected by the real estate bubble, in that renters were buying instead of renting, and the vacancy rates were high, and that kept pressure on rents. Well, now that the interest rates are high and credit standards are reemerging, less people are buying and more people are renting. Rents are going up. Now, of course, CPI is going up. And, of course, now we hear calls from many people on Wall Street that, oh, no, we shouldn't count rents now, that rents are only going up because of the housing bubble bursting, and therefore it's really not inflationary and we shouldn't look at it. Of course, none of these people were saying we should ignore a falling rents when rents kept the core going down, but now, of course, they want to kick out rents. And I suppose, you know, they can make an argument. Maybe the government will decide that, you know, rents have no business being in the core CPI. They're too volatile. Maybe they'll take rents out, too. By the time the government is finished, the only thing that's going to be left in the core CPI are going to be DRAMs or your microchips or something that they know that's always going to go down. Anyway, I know I picked up a caller. I got Eric on hold from Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Eric.
Let me give you kudos on that CNBC appearance this morning. I caught the tail end of it, but one of the, I guess it was the chief economist from Mesirow, didn't have a good explanation on the trade deficit. I think, and she had claimed that, you know, the U.S. economy was operating efficiently, but didn't have that explanation as to why the trade deficit had increased month over month. And I thought that was a good appearance.
You know, we have such an efficient, productive economy. And, you know, interestingly enough, she tried to say, have I been to Detroit recently? Now, I know that the Japanese have the highest share of the American auto market right now than ever before, and both Ford and General Motors, the only two remaining U.S. auto manufacturers, are potentially going bankrupt. So I don't know why she was trying to hold out Detroit as, you know, as the poster child for productivity. When, you know, when they're shrinking and laying people off left and right and reducing capacity. But I tried to tell her that if we really were so productive, where were all the products that we were theoretically producing? And if we were so much more productive than other people, why didn't we have extra products to sell abroad? Why did we have to buy products? Why did we have to import so much?
Exactly. I mean, that was great. I mean, she kind of was backed into a corner at that point.
And all she can say is that, well, our economy is so strong that we suck in all these imports, which is nonsense. It's absolutely nonsense to try to argue that. I mean, it's like if she's like a little kid trying to argue with her parents that the F on a report card really stands for fabulous. That's what she's trying to do. You know, it's nonsense. Of course, you know, I mean, we were a wealthy, productive economy in the 1950s and the 1960s. Why didn't we have a big trade deficit then? Why did we have trade surplus? Are you on the radio show because you saw me on CNBC, or were you a listener anyway?
No, actually from CNBC, but from months ago.
Oh, okay. Good. Are you a client yet?
I'm not a client, but most of my investments are outside of the United States.
All right, well, you should be using Euro Pacific Capital to help you make them. Do you understand the difference between the way we trade foreign stocks and the way most firms do?
Somewhat. I mean, it's not very clear on your site.
You should go, you know, to look at the Euro Pacific Advantage, which is on our site, but talk to one of the brokers, because most firms, almost all U.S. firms, to the extent that they give you access at all to foreign markets, the access is limited to domestic market makers on the pink sheets. And it creates a tremendous spread that you need to buy and sell into, and it really, you know, increases your transaction costs and makes it far more difficult to make a profitable investment or to get a good yield. And to the extent that you do get access directly, it's very expensive. There's a lot of hidden fees and charges that you don't know about, where money is basically being taken from you and giving to traders and market makers and currency traders and everything else. So if you really want to access the foreign markets efficiently and you want to work with a firm who's looking for the types of ideas that really will help insulate you from a collapse of the dollar, you know, you should talk to our brokers and we should be doing business.
I might just do that. Thanks.
All right, great. Well, thanks for the call, and I look forward to working with you as a client. And I know I have another caller on hold. I've got Trevor from our neighbors to the north up in Canada. Go ahead, Trevor.
Hi. First off, just like to say I love the show. I love your guys' commentaries on the website. I've been reading them for quite a while. I just have a couple comments. First off, I don't know if you've noticed this. You probably have. On CNBC, all the clowns that come on there and talk about the CPI in the past couple of months, I don't know if you've noticed, but they seem to mention a lot how, like, the CPI is really bumping up in the core now because of the owner's equivalent rent.
Right.
And how, it's kind of funny because it's sort of backfiring on them now. Like, and a lot of people seem to be writing about this on the bear sites. And I'm just wondering, you know, what's the chance that you know, the government's going to try to fudge this away by, you know, saying that, oh, yeah, look, you know, the owner's equivalent rent is this bogus boogeyman in the CPI, and that we need to take it out.
Well, of course, you know, it's heads they win, tails we lose. And, you know, I talked about this, again, over a year ago, where I called it live by the core, die by the core. And I predicted precisely that this was going to happen eventually, that as real estate prices were falling and interest rates were rising, that rents would be on the rise and that the core would start to rise. I mean, I called it exactly, and I talked about how ironic it was going to be. And I said, you know, as the Fed really has to raise rates, that's going to force rents up higher. And so the more they raise rates to fight inflation, the worse the core is going to get.
Yeah, and the
heavily into rent. You know, look, they're going to always try to rationalize away things and explain things. And look, you know, if they took food and energy out, why can't they take rents out entirely? You know what I mean? Now, owner's equivalent rent, I don't know, was it the owner's equivalent rent that went up or the actual rent? Because there's two types of rents in there.
Yeah, I don't really understand exactly, you know, how they calculate the two. And
of course, as far as I know, the way they calculate owner's equivalent rent, I mean, it's all nonsense. What they do is they take a survey on the phone of homeowners, and they ask them what they think they can rent their place for. So it's so unscientific. I mean, I don't know why they should just use home prices and they should use rents. But they took home prices out in the 70s because prices were rising, and they didn't want them in the CPI. But if they're not going to use home prices, then they should use, you know, the average mortgage payment on the average house. So something that would really reflect what it costs to maintain a house. But this owner's equivalent renting, it just doesn't make any sense. Because how the hell does a homeowner know what he could get if he rented out his place? Because he's not renting it. So how does he know what he could get? And chances are most single-family homes, I mean, they don't rent them anyway. So how would somebody know what they could get if they rented their house?
Right.
So I think the government puts that in there because I think they can put whatever the hell they want in there. So I think, you know, I think if they get some pressure, I think they'll just start putting in lower numbers to bring down the owner's equivalent rent because it's all made up anyway.
Well, people are actually, you know, on TV now, like, actually calling for this, you know, that they're saying, well, you know, we can't count this because it's, you know...
Well, of course, look, they always don't want to count things. They're always going to make excuses why, you know, we're not counting energy, we're not counting food. Okay, well, why count rent? I mean, you know, that's what I joked about. I said eventually the only thing we're going to count is going to be, you know, microchips. It's going to be something that's falling. You know, let's not count whatever goes up. If something goes up, let's make an excuse for why we don't have to pay any attention to it. Let's just focus on what's going down, which is just, it's all nonsense.
Right, right.
But like when I talked today, you know, with that woman this morning, the economist, and I said, you know, the government has an agenda. She says, no, they don't. You know, I said, well, they, you know, like I said that they have a bias, that they have a, you know, and she's like completely in the dark. And she says, well, no, have you ever met anyone on the Fed? And I said, well, you know, I don't have to meet them to know what they're trying to do. But she says, oh, no, they're really nice people. They wouldn't do anything. You know, although they're politicians. They're from the government. They would never try to mislead the public. Oh, no. They wouldn't do anything to try to increase the chances that they get reelected. Oh, no. That's not what they're all about. They're just, you know, good people. They just want to tell the truth.
Right.
That's how naive these guys are.
Well, the thing is that, you know, a lot of, you know, your theories and my theories and stuff, they kind of, like, if the CPI keeps going up and it, you know, forces the Fed's hand and they actually start to show some of the actual inflation, then, you know, like... then, like, the rest of the public will see what's going on and everything that we're predicting will come true, right? But if they keep lying even more, you know, like, there's a good chance here for the CPI to really shoot up because of this rent thing in the next, say, 6 months, right? But if they just hide it all away, you know, then, the you know, for the next 6 months to 1 year, this might not play out as well as, you know, you or I would hope.
Like, oh, I mean, in what respect? Hoping for what?
Well, you know, like, because, you know, if inflation, if the CPI is shooting through the roof, then, of course, gold's going to go up, you know, and the...
Well, you know, right now it's actually opposite. You know, the higher inflation numbers are actually hurting gold. I'm going to talk about that a little later as to, you know, as to why gold is plunging just as inflation is rearing its ugly head, at least according to the public.
But that's not going to last.
That's the time where gold should be shining.
Right.
You know, but in one case, it's like a buy the rumor, sell the fact. If you think, okay, now... the market is acknowledging that there's inflation. Gold had been rising on anticipation of inflation, and now that people actually acknowledge it, there's some profit taking. But I think a lot of it too has to do with the belief that the Fed is on the job. That okay, yeah, they're, you know, they spotted inflation, they're going to quickly snuff it out. And I mean that is a very naive approach or view to have.
Right.
In fact, the Fed, as I said, is still miles behind the inflation curve. They still have interest rates negative. So they're nowhere near confronting inflation. They're trying to pretend that they are to try to prevent a mass run on the dollar. But the markets are going to figure this out. And as I said, ultimately, you know, you do these surveys, the public knows. You know, CNBC has been running these surveys. You know, do you think there's inflation? Give us a call. And they're getting so much mail and so many calls from people who are talking about this price went up, that price went up, this price. You know, eventually people are going to say, look, I don't care what the government tells me. I know that there's inflation. I don't give a damn. You know, like this woman on that I was arguing with today. I tried to define inflation, and she said, "Well, it doesn't matter. What matters is what the Fed says inflation is." And I said, "Look, I don't care what the Fed is pretending inflation is. I know what it is. You know, I don't care what how the government defines it. I know what it is. The government's trying to confuse us." You know,
you said about that CBS show. That's just hilarious that they just, you know, conveniently leave out the headline number and just concentrate on the core, but.
Yeah, it is just an amazing feat of government propaganda that some of the ministries, you know, from Italy and Germany during the fort would be amazed that we were able to pull it off.
Right.
Anyway, thanks for the call, and keep listening to the show and tell your friends.
Okay, sure.
I know we have another caller on hold. Let me take a quick break. We'll play a commercial on how to get a hold of Euro Pacific Capital, and we'll pick up the program after the break with your phone calls and more on the markets.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back. Anyway, the number to call is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. And let's take a call from Harold.
Yes, I was just on your website, and it says here on the Rogers Raw Materials Fund, the Rogers Raw Material Fund, though not suited for all investors, remains our favorite of the various alternatives. I was wondering, hasn't that been closed due to a bankruptcy?
It has been closed. The fund itself is not bankrupt, and the fund continues to operate and perform extremely well for the shareholders that are in there now. But we haven't been able to offer the units to new investors until the bankruptcy of Revco is resolved, because Revco is holding a lot of the Rogers Fund money. And hopefully the fund will reopen, sometime this year. I mean, it's just the court system is just operating so slowly in the United States that it's taking forever to resolve this. But we're very confident that ultimately it will be resolved in a favorable manner, which will not only benefit the existing holders of the partnership, but anybody who wants to invest, but who has not been able to invest because the fund has been closed pending the resolution of these court proceedings. Now, there are other alternatives to the Rogers Fund that we have recommended, and the brokers at Euro Pacific Capital can discuss those with you. There's a new one just came out, I think, by ABN AMRO or Credit Suisse, or I forget one of the ones. It looks pretty good. That's a fund. There are alternatives that can work until the Rogers Fund is available again.
I'm just wondering what...
We'll get a lot of people who are interested in it, and we are very anxious to resume, marketing the fund once we're able to do it.
Well, I'm just kind of wondering what kind of due diligence you do to put the client's money in something where they haven't been able to get it back for 6 months, and they probably won't for another 6 months.
Well, at the time that we were investing in it, you know, there was no way to know. I mean, they weren't even with Revco. They switched their deposits to Revco within months of Revco's bankruptcy. And we were in the Rogers Fund from the very beginning, so we had had clients in there for 4 or 5 years, and there hadn't been a problem. And, you know, the bankruptcy of Revco was something that I, as a broker, could not have possibly foreseen when I first started the fund, number one, because Revco wasn't even their custodian. And it happened so quickly, there would have been no reason for me to have thought that there was a problem. So, sometimes, things like that happen, but hopefully, based on all the evidence that I've seen, none of our investors will lose a dime. In fact, everybody who put money into the Rogers Fund through us has a substantial gain right now on their investment. I mean, the Rogers Fund has done phenomenal. So hopefully, 100% of those gains will be retained by the clients. I mean, I guess it's still possible that they won't get back all their gains if the court doesn't rule the way I believe that they will. But based on all the evidence I've seen, there's no reason for me to doubt that they will not prevail. In fact, it looks like they will prevail, but, I mean, nothing's 100%.
Well, and that was a United States company. I'm wondering, do you invest in a lot of foreign stocks?
We do.
What kind of due diligence do you do to know that they are not like the Rogers Fund?
Well, like the Rogers Fund, in what respect?
Well, the people can't get any of their money out.
Well, we're investing in corporations. So Rogers Fund is unique in that it's a partnership where we own interest in a partnership. But almost all the stocks that we recommend to clients are publicly traded securities where they're listed on foreign exchanges. So, the ability to get your money out is the liquidity inherent in the shares, because the shares are listed. It's just like buying, IBM here in the United States. You buy shares of IBM. If you want to sell it, you place an order to sell IBM. And again, you sell it on the New York Stock Exchange. That's what we're doing. But we're not buying IBM. We're buying stocks listed in Singapore, in Switzerland, in Hong Kong, in New Zealand, in Canada. And so we're buying publicly traded companies. There are only a few products that we've recommended that are not publicly traded when they are unique and they serve a niche that is hard to get elsewhere. And the Rogers Raw Material Fund was a way for individuals to have direct unleveraged exposure to commodities themselves, not commodities producers, not commodity companies, but the actual commodities. And the way the fund was structured, it was unique, and it was a great idea that Rogers had. And he himself had a lot of money in the fund, and he remains the largest investor in that fund.
So your due diligence is that if a company is listed on an exchange in Singapore, then they're okay?
No. We have several analysts that work with us in addition to myself, and we look at the history of the company. We look at, how long they've been in business, what they're earning. We look at their balance sheets. We look at their income statement. We look at a lot of things before we recommend a stock to our customers, and so far, we've done a pretty good job of finding companies that have turned out to be good investments. I mean, we generally look for very conservative ideas. We look for high dividends, for our clients. And are you a client, or are you just a potential client?
No, I was just looking at this on your site, and I saw the Rogers Raw Material Fund, and I just kind of wondered why that was.
Yeah, we still have it up there. We have a lot of people interested in it. We don't know when it's going to be available for sale again, but we still have it there. We have a lot of people that are waiting for an opportunity to buy the fund. In fact, the recent decline in commodity prices is strapped. We had about a 10% decline in the CRB in the last week or two, so this is the first real meaningful decline we've seen in the Rogers Index. And so it'd be nice if it didn't rebound so quickly that we couldn't get new investors in, because the pullback is always the best time to buy. But anyway, if you have more specific questions, I don't want to use up the whole program on this topic, but if you have more specific questions about Rogers or about any of the stocks that we're recommending or how we recommend them or what goes into the process, just call the 800 number on that website and talk to one of my brokers.
Okay.
It's 800-727-7922. And I got a lot of good guys. I'll take plenty of time and talk to you and hopefully answer all your questions.
Thank you very much.
Right, thanks for the call. Yeah, it's very, it disappointed us that what happened with Rogers. I mean, we were actually getting a lot of investor inquiry in that fund, and the fund had been doing very well. So it's very unfortunate that the Revco situation happened, and not only that, but that that the Rogers fund had the misfortune or ill timing of moving funds to Revco just months before the company declared bankruptcy. So it was just one of those things. It wasn't anything that we really could have known in advance, and hopefully none of the investors will suffer as a result. But, obviously there's a possibility, and, everybody who invested in the Rogers Fund knew they were investing in a partnership. They did get a prospectus. There were risks involved, and, people always invest accordingly. I mean, people invested far less money, for example, in the Rogers Fund than they might have in something with considerably less risk. And, of course, we knew the Rogers Fund did not pay dividends, which inherently meant that it was more speculative than most of the stuff that we do, which is conservative dividend or income-producing stocks. Anyway, I've got another caller on the line, Bob from New York. Go ahead, Bob.
I'm on the cell phone, and the quality isn't that good, so I'm going to ask you a question, and then I'm going to listen to you on the radio for your answer. I just wanted to know, number one, how much and whether you're surprised at the severity of the precious metals correction, and then your analysis of where you see it now and what the basic situation is, and I'll listen for your answer.
Yeah, well, we have had a very severe drop. I mean, gold prices got as high as about $725, and now we're about $550. And silver prices got above $15, and now we're back below $10. So these are very, very substantial declines in a very short period of time. Now, obviously, I didn't foresee a decline of this magnitude. I mean, I don't think anybody could have foreseen a decline of this magnitude in this amount of time. If they did, and they actually foresaw it, meaning they acted on it, they're very rich today because they would have bought puts and they could have positioned themselves. People might have thought, well, maybe, but to actually forecast it for sure would have been something that probably nobody was able to do. Certainly, it would have been easy to forecast, yeah, we're going to get a pullback, we're going to get a decline, the market's overbought, sure. But this was a very, very big decline in a very short period of time. And I think that anybody who might have made the forecast, if they actually got it accurately, would have had a forecast an across-the-board decline. Because this is not specific to gold or silver or metals or commodities. Everything is collapsing, particularly emerging market stocks, right, in the Russian market, in the Indian market. You know, everything is going down. The NASDAQ was actually down. If it was down today, it would have been the first time it's been down 9 days in a row in like 25 years. I mean, the U.S., I mean, everything is falling. It's not unique to gold. Therefore, what I think is behind the decline is not something that's gold specific, but I think it is leverage related. I think what's happening is liquidity is being withdrawn, maybe from the Bank of Japan, also from the perception that, you know, Bernanke's tough talk on inflation means that he's going to have to keep raising interest rates even if there is an accident. Remember, there was, during the Greenspan era, everybody believed in the Greenspan put, that if the markets ever really started to come under pressure because of leverage, that Greenspan would come to the rescue with an interest rate cut with extra liquidity. And I think the market is beginning to question whether or not that is true with Bernanke, given his recent statements, that maybe even if the markets start to unravel, that the Fed is going to be precluded from stepping up, that they might have to raise interest rates into a market decline. And that's very scary for a leveraged speculator. And I think that as some of these assets are falling, remember, if you're a hedge fund, there's like 6,000 hedge funds out there. These guys are buying with a lot of leverage. Now, some hedge funds are actually hedging. They're long and short. They're market neutral. So those funds are more likely not the ones that are under pressure. But there are certainly a lot of directional funds. I mean, the funds that really hit the big home runs are not market neutral, but they pick a direction. And the direction that most funds are in is long. And they're leveraged to the long side. And that's how they're making the big returns. They're taking a lot of risk. Well, when the assets start moving against them, they could be in a situation where they no longer have sufficient collateral for those loans, and they need to start repaying some of the loans. Now, the only way they can do that is to sell the assets. And the assets are, in many cases, gold stocks, if that's what they've been buying, gold and silver itself, emerging markets, whatever it is. And, you know, home builders, look at the home builders are down 40-50% in the last couple of months. And they're just getting killed. Home builders have very little to do in common with gold miners. Yet they're both getting killed together, and I think it's a function of liquidity, and it's a function of assets that are owned by leveraged speculators who are in the process of deleveraging. And of course, as the markets move against them, you know, you have a lot of momentum players that are exiting, you've got stop losses that get triggered, you've got forced margin calls, you've got redemptions that need to be financed, all sorts of things start to happen. The selling feeds on itself. And of course, you know, when there's a lot of sellers, the buyers step out of the way, the sellers have to sell, and the prices really go down. Ultimately, I think once all the forced selling is washed out, I think some prices, like the example would be gold, I think will come roaring back. I think these are great opportunities, short-term buying opportunities, where liquidity has created a situation where gold is on sale, and it's not going to be on sale forever. And I think it's a good time, certainly, for people to buy. Now, does that mean that we're at the bottom? I mean, I think there's a pretty good chance that 550 is going to represent support, because if you go back, the $550 level was significant overhead resistance for a long time. And when it finally broke through it, you know, we went straight up to 700. So there's a chance that there's going to be a lot of support around this level. Does that mean the support's going to hold? No. I mean, it could go lower. Who the hell knows? You know, and there could be some real blow-ups. There could be some real financial accidents in the offing in the hedge fund community. But ultimately, all of this is extremely bullish for precious metals. Right? The fact that there's this leverage is blowing up and the people are over-leveraged and there might be bankruptcies and all of this is good for gold. And the fact that inflation is running higher and higher is a good thing for gold. The fact that right now it might be under pressure because of the false perception that the Fed is going to prevent the inflation is completely wrong-headed and misses the point that not only are they not going to prevent it, but it's already out of control. I mean, the horse has already left the barn, and they're not even trying to close the door. So I think it's, you know, I think it's a great opportunity. And, you know, I certainly, in the back of my mind, and maybe it should have been more in the front of my mind, because I really didn't sell any of my own. I mean, I sold one position in my largest gold stock. I reduced it by a third. But I really didn't sell much. And, you know, I had some tremendous gains in my personal account, which are all wiped out. I mean, tremendous gains on the year. I mean, the gains from previous years haven't been wiped out. But I had enormous gains, and they're pretty much gone. And so I might have been able to do something. But one of the main concerns, or what concerned me, is my, and I mentioned this on the program, is that when I was at the bull bear debate in the Money Show, my two opponents who were arguing the bullish case on why the U.S. economy was great and why the stock market was great, both were recommending gold and gold stocks. And that kind of scared me a little bit. And, of course, the reason that they were recommending them was the exact opposite reason I was recommending. They were calling, they thought gold was going to go up because of how great the economies were, that the economies were so good that they were producing so much wealth that people wanted to wear more jewelry, that as wealth was being created, people wanted more gold watches and gold chains, and therefore the demand for gold was going up, and so gold stocks were going to do well as a business because of how great the economy was and how great... Now, this is all a bunch of nonsense. Now, I'm pretty sure that Battipaglia and Navalier or any of their clients are out of the gold market now. I'm pretty sure that this correction got those guys out. All those people that were in the gold market for the wrong reasons, that were just there for the momentum and were just kind of, you know, making up some justification for it, I'm pretty sure they're flushed out. Anybody that was in this market with a stop, anybody who had one foot out the door now has both feet out the door. And I think that's a great environment from which a real sustained another leg up can come. And I think the speculators will probably stay out of the gold market until we're well above the 725 again. But in the meantime, you know, long-term investors, you know, this is a great opportunity. If you already own gold, have you lost any money? No. You know, however much gold you have, you still have it. That's your money. Your gold is your money. Don't worry about what it's temporarily valued at in terms of dollars that may ultimately be worthless. It only matters if you still have more dollars that you wish to convert to precious metals. And I know a lot of Euro Pacific Capital clients who have bought gold recently have been advised by us to kind of proceed a little bit slower, not to buy nothing, because you never know. I mean, the market could have kept going up, but I know we've told a lot of people to try to scale into the market, to try to buy some and then wait and buy some more. And so the fact that gold has pulled back is an excellent opportunity for people to accumulate more ounces than they would otherwise have been able to accumulate had the price continued to go up. So don't look at the decline. You know, I even talked to one of my clients today about it, and I asked her, you know, she was worried, and I said, look, you know, what happens when you go to a department store and there's a shirt that you want, a blouse that you want to buy, and it's on sale, it's 30% off. You see it there, it's a great price. You love the blouse, you think it's a good price, and you go ahead and buy it. You know, if a couple of weeks later you come by and the blouse is there and it's on sale again, 40% off, does that mean you've lost money because now it's selling for cheaper than what you bought? No. If you liked the blouse and you thought it was a good price, how does it affect you that somebody else might get a better deal? You can never be a greedy and be a pig and worry that somebody else might be able to buy something cheaper than you did. You know, if you get a good deal, if the price makes sense to you and you buy it, fine. You know, just because somebody else might get a better deal doesn't mean that your deal wasn't good. And anybody who's always looking for that best deal, hey, I don't want to buy that blouse now because it might go 40% off. Well, what if it doesn't go 40% off and they sell out? And now you don't have the blouse. And now, you know, I like that blouse so much, maybe you have to chase it down and end up paying full price for it because you were too greedy waiting for the absolute best sale. But anyway, you know, that we sell Perth Mint mainly out of the office in California. Perth Mint, run by Danny Dwyer. You want to do something in Perth, you want to buy some gold, that's the way we sell it. That's our preferred way to sell gold. Give her a call, 800-993-8350, 800-993-8350. Have we taken the last commercial break yet? I don't think so. Let's take one quick break, and we'll come back with your calls in the last segment.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we're back, and let's take one more call. I've got Russell on the line from North Carolina. Go ahead, Russell.
I'd like to ask about 10-year Treasury notes, gold and silver. The 10-year Treasury notes are currently under 5%, which I think is just insane.
Well, that's not insane. What's insane is the people dumb enough to buy them.
Well, okay, you're right. I wouldn't loan a dollar to the U.S. government on 5% interest and hope to get paid back in 10 years, but apparently billionaires are doing it. The other thing is in the last month or two, not even about 3 weeks, gold and silver have taken a dive. And it seems to me there's no fundamental reason why they should have gone down.
I just went over explaining that. It's about liquidity. I mean, what happened, and this is obviously my opinion, but it seems to make sense, is that in the recent move up in gold, I think a lot of leveraged speculators were attracted to the market. And a lot of people jumped on the gravy train. It was going up. It looked like free money. And you got a lot of speculators involved. All of a sudden, things turn around, and you get a lot of people trying to get out the same door at the same time. And, you know, the price is going to collapse in that circumstance because there's just so many sellers trying to sell in a short window.
Well,
you know, it'd be like, you know, if there's a small neighborhood, and let's say there's a company there that all of a sudden needs to relocate a lot of workers, and everybody puts their house up for sale, and they all got to sell right away because they got to move next month. You know, in order to move that inventory, prices might really drop.
We can't prove one or the other, but it just seems all of a sudden, while in the last 2 or 3 weeks there's a tremendous downward surge of both gold and silver, for that matter. It seems
it's not just gold and silver. It's copper. It's nickel. Yes. Lead. It's zinc. It's you know, all these emerging markets. So many things dropped in unison. Okay. It's not simply isolated to precious metals.
I think people who know what's going on realize that gold and silver right now are bargains, and they're going to go back in and buy silver at 9.5, buy gold at what's it, 5.40 right now, something like that? I mean, these are the 60 bargains. Okay, 5.60.
I agree. I mean, look, I agree. Any type of decline in gold or silver, this is a bull market. You know, the bull market is ongoing. It's still early. These corrections are meant to scare people, and I'm sure a lot of people have got scared in this recent decline. A lot of people got shaken out of the market. You know, bull markets, you know, want to carry as little excess baggage along with them as possible. They have these corrections. Ultimately, you know, this, as I said, this is the second phase of the bull market. The first phase was gold was rising in obscurity. No one paid attention to it. No one noticed it. The second phase, it draws attention, but more people are nervous. More people are skeptical. They're worried about losing. So the entire second phase of the bull market, gold climbs a wall of worry. It's doing that now. In the last stage, the final stage, is when no one's worried. It might become a mania. Gold just goes up, and everybody, it's greed. Greed replaces fear. And that's the final stage. And we're nowhere near that stage yet. So we've got a long way to go. And, you know, it's you know, if you have money on the sidelines, it's a good time to buy. If you don't have money on the sidelines, you know, just ride it out. You know, the only people that are really going to be hurt by this move are people who were over-leveraged and are now being forced to sell because they were too highly leveraged. Fortunately, that's not the case with any clients at Euro Pacific Capital. We took a very conservative approach. We use minor amounts of leverage, and we don't use leverage, at least for clients anyway, when it comes to gold stocks. I haven't followed that advice for my own account, But again, I didn't buy any of my gold stocks recently. The vast majority of my gold stocks were bought years and years ago at cost basis is way below the current market.
Why are these institutions buying these 10-year treasury notes at under 5%?
I think that is the $65 trillion question, I suppose. My guess is that they're being bought in large part by foreign central banks, by the Federal Reserve itself. And so these central banks are buying for political reasons. They're not buying for the economic merit, so they couldn't care less. I think you also have mortgage-backed, people that are using these vehicles as part of their hedging strategies, so they're not necessarily buying them for their investment merit, but for matching duration or for hedging a prepayment risk or different things like that, having nothing to do with the actual value. I also think you've got buying from people who are leveraging and trying to make bets on changes in interest rates or in spreads between treasuries and corporates or treasuries and junk or other types of...
Still a bad investment no matter what they're doing, the way I see it.
But they're not looking at the investment. They're looking at it as a speculative trade relative to something else and leverage. So I just think there's a lot of exogenous factors creating demand for these securities beyond which people are just going to hold them for 10 years and clip coupons. But ultimately, yes, ultimately the value of treasuries has to be their long-term value as investments, which means eventually they're going to plunge.
Now what happens if, say 3 weeks from now or a month from now, the Fed increases the interest rates a quarter or an eighth of what they do? How will that affect the 10-year notes?
Well, no. I mean, the 10-year notes should be dropping. I mean, when the Fed raises rates the next quarter of a point, we'll have an inverted yield curve.
It has inverted right now.
But no, it's not reverted right now. The 10-year is about 5.1. And the 30-year is 5.1. The 10-year is still slightly, isn't it slightly over 5?
That's 4.9 in a fraction, but whatever it is. I mean, it's still, even if it were 6%, it would be crazy. I
look, I agree. I wouldn't, the only, I've said on this program, the only thing worse than owning dollars today is owning a promise to pay dollars tomorrow. Because you know the dollar is going to be worth less in the future than it is right now. And if you think that inflation is less than 5%, you're nuts.
I understand. That's crazy. That's
especially considering you got to pay taxes on that yield. I mean, which means, I mean, you got it's negative,
but
big time.
But why would the Fed buy its own bills back? That doesn't make sense.
No. The Fed is not, they're not there. The Fed doesn't issue these bills. The government does. The way money is created is the government sells bonds to the Fed, or the Fed goes into the open market and buys treasuries and creates money out of thin air to pay for it. So they're not buying their own debt. The Fed is buying the government's debt.
The fact of the matter is,
the money they create,
with a tremendous imbalance of payments, with a stupid war for $300 million a day, how much longer can they keep the floodgates from not bursting wide open? And all these bills, bonds, and notes, the rates have got to go way up.
No, look, my bet is that's the reason that we're doing what we're doing with our clients, because we know they can't keep the floodgates open forever. And eventually the water's going to come pouring in, and most Americans are going to drown. But I'm trying to make sure as many of them as possible are safe.
Anyone on a pension, anyone on a Social Security or any kind of a pension or any kind of annuity is going to get screwed.
They're dead.
That game is over, and they haven't figured it out yet.
No, most Americans are as clueless as this woman on CNBC that I was arguing with today.
There are millions.
A nice enough woman, but she was completely clueless. And she's an economist, so if she's so fooled by it, imagine the average American.
Communist?
Not communist, economist.
An alleged economist. Hey, I studied, I'm actually an engineer, but I studied economics in college. We didn't learn boo.
I know. In fact, a lot of times you can say that if you go into college and you major in economics, you come out knowing less than when you went in.
I mean,
they so screw up your common sense.
When was the last time fractional reserve banking was discussed, even on the radio? Even on shortwave, I mean, fractional reserve banking, you don't even hear about it, how money is made out of nothing and stuff like that, and that's the key to why the banks are so wealthy. That isn't taught anymore in schools. I mean, how do people know what a dollar is?
Well, they don't. They just believe what the government tells them. But anyway, so are you a client of Euro-Pacific?
No, sir.
Oh, well, you ought to...
client of anybody. I just...
an account.
Well, all my paper went into gold and silver a long time ago.
Well, we sell gold and silver. You can buy gold and silver through us. We do gold and silver, and then we do our foreign investments. And the good thing about having a mix is, you know, the foreign investments throw off a lot of dividends. You know, so even though we've had this big drop in the precious metals market, and even though a lot of our foreign stocks have dropped this month, none of our dividends are in danger. obviously is going to have a reduction in their dividends.
I guess I've got a problem with any kind of, I mean, people invested in China because we're just cutting our heads off in the process. We're helping foreign industries and businesses improve themselves, and ultimately it's going to come back and hurt the society. That's my personal
opinion. Well, it's not going to hurt. China's success is not going to hurt America. It's our own failures that's hurting America.
Well, true.
That China can do, to, you know, any gains in Chinese productivity would benefit China and the whole world. What's screwing America is America. It's our own government that is undermining our economy with high taxes and high regulation and cheap money. And the public is buying it, and the public, and we're borrowing and consuming instead of producing and saving. We're screwing it to, we're doing it to ourselves.
This whole
MBA, nobody to blame but ourselves.
I think every MBA school should be bombed out of existence. They're all preaching more for less and something for nothing, and it's a bunch of nonsense. The world doesn't work that way. The Bush and these guys preaching this foreign trade, free trade is killing this country. It just
no, free trade isn't killing the country. Free trade is fine. What's killing the country is our own policies. If we just put up more barriers and more protection, that's not the answer. The answer is to get more competitive ourselves, to return to our roots of limited government, abide by the Constitution, get the government, reduce it to its absolute smallest size possible, and get everybody off the dole, get the government out of the business of social welfare and trying to fine-tune the economy. And go back to a constitutional, limited government, free capitalist republic, which is what we're supposed to be. And then we could have free trade, and everybody would benefit. Anyway, thanks for the call, and maybe we could do business in the future. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, we don't want to blame our problems on other people. In fact, right now, it's the rest of the world's charity that is keeping our economic heads above water. Now, whether in the long run they're doing us any favors, it remains to be seen, but certainly in the short run, we are living on the kindness and the foolishness of the rest of the world. And people need to remember that and put that into its proper perspective. Though certainly America in the past, we were a very generous society, and we, you know, single-handedly rebuilt our enemies in at the end of World War II. And a lot of people, you know, will forget that and forget how generous America really was at a time. But that America is gone. You know, that America doesn't exist anymore except in the history books and in the movies. You know, it's a different society today, unfortunately. And, you know, I don't even have any memory of it because, of course, I wasn't even alive, you know, during that period of time. So, I you know, my only recollection is through stories from relatives or, you know, through books or through movies. Anyway, we're coming near the end of the show. Basically, the bottom line right now is this is a great opportunity to be adding to your account at Euro Pacific Capital. Definitely, I mean, yeah, I didn't see this severe of a recession coming in commodities and natural resources. I didn't think it was impossible that it could happen. Certainly know that there's always, anything is always possible. But it's nothing that is disturbing me. It's nothing that is causing me any consternation. Because I think it's an opportunity. I think the fundamental picture is still working out. In fact, if anything, what's happened recently only more enforces the long-term outlook of what I've been saying. And more of what I've been saying has been coming true. And again, you know, I like to look at it as we're playing a game of chess, and a lot of people in the market are playing checkers. We're paying for the end game, for the ultimate move. And, you know, we're not just thinking one move, we're thinking about the end of the game. Anyway, I thank everybody for listening. Again, remember to go to the website at www.europac.net, EUROPAC.net, europac.net. Call us up toll free, 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922. Make sure to visit the website every day. I always put an advance notice of when I'm going to be on CNBC or Bloomberg or any other TV appearance. There's a lot of good news stories in there, and there's a lot of free reports to download. You can sign up for my newsletter, The Global Investor. Make a point to go to Euro Pacific. Put it on your favorites, bookmark your site, and visit it every day. There's a lot of great information there, even if you're not a client. Anyway, thanks for listening, and I'll be with you again next week. So long, everyone.